Many of us find our comfort zone, then stay in it. And there's nothing wrong with that. I know I'm guilty of that every now and then, but some folks choose to be challenged over and over again because it gives them energy and passion and life. My guest today on Take It From the Top is Emily Skinner. She's one of those folks who finds vitality in being outside of her comfort zone. Emily's probably best known for her Tony-nominated performance as Daisy Hilton, one half of the conjoined twins at the center of the heartbreaking musical Sideshow. Over a full and varied career originating roles, I'm honored that Emily created the role of Alexandra in the 2007 U.S. premiere of The Witches of Eastwick, a show I wrote with John Dempsey. Hearing her beautiful voice sing made my heart soar as much as watching her fly over the stage of the Signature Theater. Emily joins me today by phone from New York City, where we both found out how honking cars don't care if you're recording a podcast. Let's find out what makes Emily tick and how her grit and bring it on attitude have taken her to the top. Emily Skinner, thank you so much for being here with me today.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here.
I've been a fan of yours for a very long time, so I'm just going to get right to it. When you were a child, what was your favorite book to read, Emily Skinner?
Oh, wow. You know what I was really into as a kid? I was really into all those Marie Sendak books.
Which Marie Sendak book?
I was really into Really Rosie.
What was it about Really Rosie that grabbed you?
Well, it was about a little girl who lived in Brooklyn, and she sort of lived in her imagination, and she put on shows with the other kids in her neighborhood. And, as you know, something about it just sort of resonated for me, and I sort of thought of myself, you know, like that. Like I was living in a parallel universe to her.
And now you're the one putting on shows like Really Rosie was.
That's right. That's right. I do think I was that little kid who sort of I knew early on this is what I wanted to do. You know, I was very, very hyper as a young girl. I was that kid that you look at and go, oh my goodness, what's up with that kid? And I was so hyper, in fact, that when I was in kindergarten, there was discussion about not passing me on to the first grade because I literally could not sort of sit down and be present and focus with the class. And then at some point towards the end of the school year, the kindergarten teacher, the brilliant, brilliant woman said to me, okay, Emily, you're going to get 10 minutes every day to entertain the class. And then when that is over, you have to sit down and be with the class for the rest of the day. And that was sort of like opening Pandora's box.
Wow. Incredible.
Brilliant, if you will.
A brilliant woman.
I know. Really, truly a brilliant woman. If I ever win anything in my entire life, she's going to be the first person I thank.
What is her name? We have to thank her now. What is her name?
Oh, well, her maiden name was Miss Brown, and then she got married and she became Irene Ziegler. Yeah, she was very, very special.
You've performed probably many roles that people would consider to be the dream role, you know. But if you could play any role, now this is moving outside of the comfort zone for Emily Skinner, if you could play any role, any gender, any age, any vocal range, what would it be?
I really tend to like the canon of older musicals. Mm-hmm. I tend to sort of gravitate towards that ilk of musical, just because they're very well crafted. But I do sort of think in my secret heart of hearts, I would love to be in another original musical and originate a role, you know. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of performers sort of feel similarly to me. You know, there's something wonderful about developing a role and helping to create a role as an actor. That's a, you know, a wonderful creative event.
Well, you know, I think that's really what sets you apart from a lot of the folks I've had the privilege to work with, is that you think like a writer. Where did that come from?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. You know, I don't know if I think so much like a writer, but I do think I think like a director. I do think that is a truism of me. And maybe it's just a function of having done this for so long and having sat in rooms with very good directors and sometimes very not so good directors for a long time, that you just learn. You just learn how to think that way and sometimes how to think in advance of them. I find so much as a performer that I look around at my contemporaries and you see the people who work consistently are the people who are self-directors, if you will. You know, they're self-directors. They're hired because a director can look at them and go, oh, that person will take care of themselves. So I don't have to worry about spoon-feeding a performance to them. I can worry about the show. I can worry about the grand scheme of the show versus having to, you know, machinate a performance from this person, you know?
It takes one more thing out of the recipe for them that they have to worry about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, especially if you're working on something new, you know, like you've done so many times, you know, I've done a number of workshops over in my career. And I can honestly say that those experiences were probably the most thrilling to me. Workshops that were really, really used as workshops where we went into rehearsal every day and we would get new pages and we would try them out. And then we'd come in the next day and we'd have brand new pages and we'd try them out. And it really was used as a really, you know, a way to truly shape and develop the show in a really constructive way. Right now, sort of what's happening a lot is because it costs so much to produce things, shows are getting developed via 29-hour readings, which you probably know about.
Talk a little bit about that, though, because some people may not be familiar with a 29-hour reading.
Well, 29-hour readings are basically week-long readings where our actors union says you can only rehearse up to these amount of hours, up to 29 hours, which tends to end up just being, you know, readings at stands of the scripts, and which is a different thing. It's a very short process, and oftentimes those things tend to be used sort of as backers auditions too. So you're not really getting to really work on the stuff. Whereas workshops tend to be, you know, lengthier amounts of time, and things are really staged, and things are really, you know, torn apart and looked at and experimented with. Because you have the time to do that. I'm a fan of the workshop. I think they sort of came into effect for a period of time when things stopped going out of town to be developed, and they started sort of developing them in town. And you know, things wax and wane. You know, trends wax and wane. At the moment, lots of things are being developed via these 29-hour readings, and who knows if that will continue or. Mm-hmm. Or whatever, but I'd love to see more workshops come back because I think they're really useful. And I know if I were a writer working on stuff, I'm sure I would feel the same way.
Yes, I've been part of both, and definitely the workshop. You get to roll up your sleeves, try on things. You said your elementary school teacher gave you 10 minutes to perform every morning, which I still think is just brilliant. What happened after that for Emily Skinner?
Well, I started to do my 10 minutes in class, and I would go home after you know, class every day, and I would figure out, ooh, what am I going to do? What am I going to do the next day? And I would, you know, lip sync to Jackson 5 records, would do puppet shows. And then when I sort of ran out of ideas, I went to my mother's Broadway cast album collection. My mother had always been a musical fan, and she had a collection of sort of very classic musical recordings. And that was when I sort of started discovering that and listening to that and falling in love with that. And that was, you know, I was 5-6 years old. So it was early for me. And a couple of weeks into having my 10 minutes of glory in the sun every day, the teacher called my mother and was like, listen, I just think you should know. I think you have a performer on your hands, and you might want to do something with that information.
Love her.
And my mother, what did my mother do? My mother enrolled me in dance class. And, you know, basically, you know, I needed an outlet. I needed that.
And so, yeah, dance classes, you got, sounds like you got maybe acting classes.
Yes. And I just sort of started exploring that. And I ended up doing some theater in my community where I grew up. And it just sort of, you know, grew from there. But early on, I thought, this is what I want to do. This is what feels right for me to do, you know.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a stage mothery mother. My mother couldn't be more unassuming, and I was the one dragging her around.
It even connects to the workshop thing, being responsible and being your own, sort of thinking like a director and being self-directing.
Yeah. Like every actor, every director is different. There are directors who, you know, who really want you to take care of yourself, mm-hmm. So that they can just look at the show. And then there are directors who really want to feel like they have a real, you know, finger on what your take on the role is, and what your moment to moment direction is. And mm-hmm. I think you have to be flexible to sort of, you know, go with the flow on everything and go into every sort of new, you know, new adventure with an open view.
Yeah.
I sort of think that's true of, you know, pretty much anything, you know?
Yeah. Don't get stuck in your own agenda and lose sight of the story.
I love telling a good story. That's my thing. I love being part of telling a story and feeling like I'm giving people a catharsis.
Mm-hmm.
They're having an emotional event in the theater. So that's always my thing, rather than my own sort of self-aggrandizement.
Yeah.
You know, always my goal is about how do we make this scene work? How do we really make this scene, you know, fly, versus how do I make myself look great?
Is there a mistake you've ever made that you just kind of go, oh my God, I made the hugest mistake?
Oh my God, I make mistakes pretty much every time I open my mouth.
But, I find that hard to believe. But,
on stage and off.
On stage,
you know, the older I get, the more sort of the more sort of forgiving I get with myself, and the more of an instant ability I have to just look at it and laugh, because it just doesn't matter. it certainly shouldn't inhibit you from getting on with it, you know.
So celebrating mistakes and kind of going, you know what, there, that happened, right?
You betcha. Absolutely. Sometimes I teach, and I see young performers get up and feel like, I mean, I can see them. I can see it in everything about them, that they feel like it. They get up and they have to be perfect.
Mm.
There's
mm-hmm.
some sort of perfection thing that they have. And I look at it and I go, oh my God, that I see what I was when I was 20 years old.
Mm.
And it's such a, you know, it's like you just want to like rip that away from them and go, that's so useless. You know, let that go. Boy, let it go. It just inhibits everything. It inhibits you finding anything interesting or true. And oftentimes your mistakes will lead you to see something you didn't see before, or maybe something that's even better than what you had originally thought. You just never know. You just never, never know. And I feel like so much of the time with jobs that I've gotten,
mm-hmm.
I've gotten them off, you know, the fact that what I perceive are as a flaw of mine, you know, versus me being, you know, homogeneously perfect, you know, it's because I'm not that I got the job, you know. You just never know. You never know.
I love that. Sort of embracing your imperfections and realizing that they are the very things that got you hired. Your gifts, really. Your imperfections are your gifts.
Yeah. I mean, there are an awful lot of directors out there, thank goodness, who respond to humanity. to respond to somebody who walks into a room and is a present human being and is available to sort of show that, you know, versus somebody who comes in and gives you a sort of cardboard, perfectly sung, perfectly sought out thing. Well, you know, it's a different quality of thing. And I just think, God, I want to be moved. I want to be affected. That's why I go to the theater. And I'm moved and affected by people who come across as true human beings. You know?
So Emily Skinner, by anybody's measurements, you're incredibly successful. You just came from Japan. You're all over the world acting and singing. And what do you consider success to be?
Oh, God, that's an easy question. To me, success is just continuing to work. I think if you are an actor who works, my God, you've won the lottery. You have won the lottery, you know, because it is a difficult thing. It's a difficult thing in this world to do that. And I have, knock on wood, miraculously for a number of years supported myself just being a stage actress. Which I think almost in this era, you go, are you kidding me? How? that's absurd. But I sort of have. And every day I wake up and think, boy, you won the lottery in that regard. So I hope I can continue to do it for a very long time.
What is one of your proudest moments?
Ooh, one of my proudest moments. You know, recently my proudest moments are it tend to be in classrooms now, because I've in the last couple of years I've begun to teach master classes in various places and helping working with students and watching them have epiphanies is one of the most thrilling things you can ever imagine, and it challenges me in a different way than it does. Than being a performer does, mm-hmm. because when you teach in a classroom, you have to be able to figure out how to talk to each person, and in classes full of young performers, they tend to be at all levels and all gradations of talents and whatever, and being able to sort of figure out ways to help them. Understand what you want them to find is wonderfully challenging. And I've had a number of experiences where I watch someone have the epiphany in front of me, and that's thrilling.
It's giving back.
Well, there's also a thing of as an actor, sort of before I started teaching, I thought, I was a little afraid of it because I thought my own process, I didn't know if I could sort of teach it or describe it or articulate it. And then getting up and having to do that, you realize, oh, wow, I know a lot more than I think I do. Mm-hmm. I actually know more than I think I do.
So.
And that's a wonderful thing. And so by teaching someone else, I keep teaching myself, which is great.
My dad always told me the best way to learn something is to teach someone else.
It's true. I think that's absolutely true.
Also, I would imagine there's a wonderful effect from that in that often when we get absorbed in our own career 100%, it has an opposite effect. And this is a lovely way to kind of come out of yourself and to teach other people. So,
oh boy, that's the truth. Yeah, I mean, I think as an actors, we can get. I think it's sort of it can become a cyclical thing of the business and what you do sort of asks that you become sort of self-involved. And the world then becomes sort of small, and your outlook becomes very small. And when you're teaching, your outlook gets very broad, which is a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. Wonderful thing. Just opens you right up.
If anything was possible, Emily Skinner, what would be your next big accomplishment?
Ooh, God, my next big accomplishment. Let me think. Gosh, you know, I think with me, I'm always, Dana, I'm always just looking for what's going to be the next really great challenging thing for myself. Mm. What's going to be the next thing that challenges me in a new way? You know, and now that tends to be what I sort of say yes to jobs on or say no to jobs on. I'm trying not to sort of repeat myself. I'm trying to sort of push myself and into places that I haven't gone before.
So whatever challenges you is really, and do you get a little, when somebody says, would you do this, please? Can we ask you to do this? And if it makes me just a little bit frightened, I go, oh yeah, I definitely have to do that.
Yep, absolutely. That's very much where I am right now. That's very well. And you know, that was a learned thing for me. Basically from doing Billy Elliot. I got that job, and I sort of knew what it was involved, but I didn't really know what it was involved. And for most of my career, I've been sort of an actress who sings and stands in one place and you know, does scenes. And Billy Elliot asked that I be so incredibly physically involved. I had to turn a cartwheel on a rake stage in 3-inch heels 8 times a week, and tap dance and box and do all of these things that were physically way past my comfort level. And when I was rehearsing for it, I thought, I can't do this. Oh my God, I can't. This is so uncomfortable for me. I'm so bad at this. I don't know how I'm going to do this. And I would go home and cry and feel anxiety. And, you know, I sort of pushed myself past that place and, found some grit and did it. And I'm so glad I did, because having done it, I will tell you, I sort of, that experience made me go, if I can do that, bring it on. I can pretty much do anything. With each sort of role that I do, you know, I played Mrs. Lovett, I played Mame, I played all these roles that sort of ask for various degrees of technical skill to them, stagecraft, and each time I do one of them, I feel daunted at the beginning, and by the end, I feel like, bring it on. If I can do that, please.
I love that.
Come on.
You said, I want to go back and just kind of reiterate, that was a learned response.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And where did that come from? Where does this grit come from, Emily Skinner? Where do you dig that up?
That's a really good question. Where did I come from?
Where can we find that?
Right. You know, I think it just sort of comes back to that word grit.
Mm.
I think that's a good word. I think that's
Isn't
a really
a
good word. Grit. I want that word to come back into vogue, you know.
Indeed.
Hardiness mm-hmm. is a good word, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Especially for women, you know.
Mm.
Oftentimes that's not something that's cultivated or taught with young girls.
Mm.
And I think that's something that I found that I sort of found later on. But by gosh, I got it now. So bring it on. But I got it by doing. I got it by doing. This is what happens. It is a learned response. And the more things you push yourself past, you push yourself into, and you feel the fear and you feel the anxiety and you feel the difficulty on it, and you push yourself in anyway, and you get through it, the more you sort of almost have a memory of that
mm-hmm.
to draw on in your heart and in your body for the next thing, you
mm-hmm.
know? So you begin to have a sort of innate confidence.
Yeah,
you know?
it builds, doesn't it?
It's true. Yeah. It's true. I had a teacher in college who used to say, and I tell this to students now too, and you know, that thing, fake it till you make it.
Mm.
You know, which I do think is a good mantra to say to yourself too. When you're not feeling it, even if you can sort of put it on, I mean, like an actor, like a mask, enough time, you do it enough times and you begin to feel confident. You know, there really is some truth to that.
You know, my next question for you was, you know, you have a billboard, Emily. It's going to be in the middle of Times Square and millions of people are going to see it, you know, weekly. What would you put on that?
Oh, God.
Fake it till you make it, or what would it be?
I don't know. It might be fake it till you make it. It might be go big or go home. I'm also leaning in that direction.
It's a challenge. Go big or go home. Fake it till you make it. Fake it till you make it, and it becomes yours, doesn't it?
I think that's true.
You know what? You not only challenge yourself, but you challenge the people around you. And you do have grit. You do have hardiness. And you are such a true person. A lot of people don't know this, but we used to be gym buddies.
Yes.
Well, that means that we were at the gym at the same time. I think we were both on elliptical machines and
that's right.
Stuff like that. But thank you for joining me today.
Oh, Dana, that's so nice. You just made my day. Thank you.
Side effects from listening to Take It From The Top include climbing out of a creative rut, getting inspired, and or living the life of your dreams. If these symptoms persist, tell a friend to download the podcast immediately.